Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
A huge thank you to Neon, our favourite New Zealand streaming service, for making this episode of Culture Vulture possible. Kia ora everybody, and welcome to one of two very, very special episodes of Culture Vulture. I'm joined, as always, by my beautiful co-host, Liv.
Hi, everyone.
How
lovely
are you,
to be
Liv?
Here. I'm good. I'm excited.
Same. So this episode and next episode, which is actually dropping on Saturday, we are talking about Taylor Swift, none other than Taylor Swift. Now, Taylor has just re-released Red, and me and Liv have been absolutely infatuated by it, eh, Liv?
Oh, it's taken over our entire weekend.
Why not?
I feel like this weekend was the perfect weekend for Red to be re-released.
Sort of rainy.
Yeah, sort of rainy. It was kind of cozy in a humid way.
In a very humid way. It was a mosh. It was just
it was super a mosh. We even went to a waterfall. It felt very dramatic.
We yelled into it. We yelled actually the words to All Too Well at one point.
Lucy went for a drive in her car.
And I cried. I just had to make up some scenarios.
And she's not much of a crier.
No.
So it says a lot.
And I've not really got much to relate to. So I had to make up some scenarios. It was good for the imagination. Now, this was initially going to be one episode, but me and Liv got deep into the weeds and we decided that it had to be a wee two-part series.
Holy fuck, the information just snowballed.
Now, like, there's nothing like there's a spontaneous two-part series,
absolutely,
is there?
Absolutely not.
Really get you going.
We're ready for it. I think it's going to be...
Good Taylor pun. Are you ready for it? Down.
I didn't even get it, so... I only know Red.
So there's an OG Swiftie here being me, and then there's my favourite narrative. I was actually thinking about this today. Mm-hmm. My favourite type of Swiftie or Taylor Swift fan is someone that wasn't really into her at the start or like heard her music, liked her music, but then upon the re-records has been like, I actually respect and love the shit out of Taylor Swift.
Oh, I feel like I have entered a new era of my like musical life.
She's in her reputation era.
Yeah, like honestly, Taylor was never really on my radar properly. I mean, like I thought she was good. I knew she was a good songwriter. I just never like listened to much of her before until Folklore and Evermore came out. And I really liked those albums. But again, I didn't have that like nostalgic feeling.
Yes.
And then living with Luce this year and our other flatmate Flo, another cameo, it has kind of really opened my eyes to the magic that is Taylor Swift. And I feel like she's had such a bad reputation, which is why she fucking made an album about it. But yeah.
She had a bad reputation, like, and in hindsight, for what? Like,
for
people
what?
Just turned on her. And we're going to get into this. So this episode is going to be the modern history of Taylor Swift. It's going to be all those eras, all those dramas, all those boyfriends and the beautiful songs that she made out of telling the stories that she has every right to tell. And then the next episode, we are going to get into the weeds. We are going to be answering the question you're all wondering. Why is she re-releasing all her old music? What did Scooter Braun do? Who is Scott Borchetta? Liv has... Is that his name?
Yeah, this is good. Yeah, I feel like I'm listening to an audiobook or something. I'm like, Lucy is on a roll.
Honestly, I don't even have to
She's
think.
Not even scripted here, people. She is just gazing off into the distance.
Honestly, I'm such a Swiftie. Like, went to her concert, went to her Speak Now concert, touched her hand. Like,
did you?
Was that front row? Very soft. Got her guitar pick.
Said this weekend.
I know.
Got her guitar pick.
I know.
Jesus.
Huge Swiftie. I know I was about 4 foot when I went to her concert, so it terrified the shit out of me. Have hardly been into a mosh pit since. But big, big fan. So, yes, this episode is going to be all her eras, bar a few, because there's just too many. And the next episode is going to be why she's re-recording. And you guys are going to love it because you'll have listened to this, you'll have all the background, and then you'll listen to the next one, and then you'll listen to only Taylor's version of anything ever. Liv, what described your week this week?
Oh, honestly, red.
Same.
I saw Taylor's red. Version in brackets.
Everywhere I looked, I just saw red.
Honestly, I did. It was everywhere I went. It literally was everywhere I went. It was in the lounge. It was in my room. It was in the car.
I know.
We just blasted it. But yeah, it was really beautiful. I think it gave me nostalgic feelings that I haven't felt in a while, even though like that music, like it must have been part of my adolescence.
Mm.
But not a sort of conscious part. But yes. It was nice to kind of like tap into that subconscious and Taylor Swift that was in my soul.
Honestly, the 10-minute version of All Too Well, like I'm going to let it sit for a while, but I think it might be one of my favourite songs like ever written. Like usually it's Life on Mars, David Bowie. And I think that's because it goes through so many different stages.
Yes.
But then Red, Taylor's version, I mean, All Too Well, 10-minute version, went through so many stages as well that, like, if in a few months I still like it as much as I like it now, it might be up there with my favourite song ever written.
I know. I think what's so amazing about it is that, yes, it's 10 minutes. It's fucking long, but it doesn't feel that way.
Doesn't feel like it.
And also, like, there's not much variation within the music itself, but her voice, like, builds an intensity without the melody changing dramatically, which I think...
Yes.
Like, it shows how strong her storytelling power is because you can't do that if your story's not there to back it up, right?
And especially that last bit where she's saying that she's not good at telling jokes, but the punchline, like that is not like wildly out of the original melody, but it's like slowed down. There's a different beat, and for some reason, it just hits different.
I know, no, it's really, really incredible songwriting. Loved it.
The Girl at Home remix. Now, I don't know if you'd heard the original Girl at Home, very acoustic, very guitar based. This one was like a club banger, and it's really good. I'm usually not here for like a club banger, but Girl at Home slept the last time with Gary Lightbody.
Oh, love that.
Stunning.
Because there's not actually that much difference, is there, between her original album and the re-recorded, just like slight subtle differences that probably you will only notice because you're a true Swiftie. but yeah, and I'm guessing, Lucy, Red probably described your week as well.
Red did describe my week, and we're going to describe it here on the podcast too, and I'm going to get into the scarf, the red scarf, the Jake Gyllenhaal story, like
the Easter eggs.
There's so much. We're gonna get into Sadie Sink and Dylan O'Brien and the meta chemistry. Age gap, and just I love it. But first of all, I'm gonna do my naughty or nice, and it's gonna be Taylor Swift
themed.
It's gonna be Taylor Swift themed.
I mean,
because
naturally.
Of course. So my first story is about a John Mayer DM. Now. Mm. Don't you worry, Liv, because I'm going to get into the Taylor Swift-John Mayer love story because it is important.
And I did ask you about this the other day, so thank God I'm getting the tea finally.
Oh, thank God. I sort of gatekept it until now. So I was reading through, I think it's pronounced Des Moines. It's this gossip Instagram account that I barely ever look at.
Mm-hmm, heard of it, yeah.
Looked at it today because I thought there's going to be some Taylor tea on here. And there was. So anyway, a bunch of fans have obviously been making memes and stuff about how John Mayer must be like quaking in his boots right now because Taylor's written some beautiful songs about him. One named Dear John, so quite obviously about him. And a lot of them have obviously been messaging him saying things like, you know, are you scared? Like, are you prepared? And we're going to get into whether you should be doing that or not in just a second. But Des Moines posted a screenshot of John's response to one of these fans. Now, all we can see is the fan who has said, "Answer me, you bitch," to which John says...
The fucking audacity.
I know. To which John says, "Hi, Alondra, it's John. I've been getting so many messages like these for the past couple of days. I decided to choose your message at random to reply to. You can feel free to screenshot, share in any way you like if you want. I'm not upset. I just tend to have a curious mind and feel compelled to ask, do you really hope that I die?" To which the fan replied saying, "OMG, what? I don't want you to die," and then sent voice recordings. So it's like this weird thing where it's a reminder to everyone that, like, this is a person Don't send death threats. Don't ever send hate or death threats. John Mayer, not the best person. We can all agree on that. Didn't treat her the way she should have been treated. That aside, we don't send death threats here. We just stan Taylor Swift.
Absolutely not. And yeah, maybe a reminder for Jake Gyllenhaal also. I know we're going to go into this. But yeah, just a person. Also, like, think about your own romantic relationships. Did you really sort of portray yourself in the best light, you know, when you were 10 years younger than you are now? Not sure. So I think, yeah.
Just a good message. Just a good message to sort of, well, not a good message from her, obviously, but a good message from us saying, just think before you type. And like, it's all good to have a laugh as long as, you know, you're always thinking, is this hurting someone?
Also a nice reminder for us before we record something like this.
Exactly. So, which I've been thinking the whole time is like, I don't want this to be hating on anyone or anything. I'm ready to just get in here and just like stan. So the next thing that I wanted to talk about is another story from Des Moines. This one about old Jakey boy Gyllenhaal, who all too well is, for legal purposes, allegedly about, and who, while we love a laugh, we also don't condone being mean to Jakey boy. But one of Jake's old interns messaged Des Moines saying that they used to intern for him. And one time he was playing music from his speakers and he put on a bunch of Taylor Swift songs in a row.
No way.
And then, and this is quoted, he comes out of his office manically saying, "Nothing like a little bit of Taylor Swift to lighten the mood." And I can't tell the tone here from the message. Like, was he like, I actually like this? Or was he making a joke? Or was he genuinely listening to it because it hypes him?
I would have paid good money to see this.
Me too. Oh, again, we always forget to do the naughty or nice. And I'm saying for the first one, naughty for the fan messaging John Mayer saying something along the lines of wanting him to die.
Yeah, but nice for John Mayer.
Nice for John Mayer to respond in such a relaxed way.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think nice of Jake Gyllenhaal to be playing
Kind of hilarious.
Taylor Swift.
I mean, I think I read somewhere that he said something to Taylor Swift about it being a bit of a photo book.
Yes. I saw that as well.
Listening to the album. So, I mean, there must be a little bit of sort of less than hate. I don't know. A little bit less than hate.
And also, like, when Taylor Swift was asked in that interview, me and Liv have watched every interview that's come out of Taylor Swift over the past weekend. I'm not sure if it was Jimmy Fallon or Seth Meyers, but how she said, the person, the interviewer asked, are you worried about their reaction or something of hearing the 10 minute All Too Well? And she just said, I haven't thought about their reaction. And like, so you should, bestie.
But
like,
yeah,
you're like, telling your story.
I don't think that's true because like, that's where my mind would be. But also, fucking good on her.
So now that we've decided that we're not going to message nasty things to Taylor's ex-boyfriends, why don't we just talk about them on a podcast? We are going to go through Taylor's eras. Well, we're going to go through all of Taylor's eras except for Lover, Folklore and Evermore, because they are reserved for part two. The first era, the era that started it all, was Taylor's self-titled era. Now the year was 2006 and a young country darling entered the scene. This was a little bit before my time, before Love Story was out and before I knew who the hell she was, but I just thought it was worth mentioning. So after years of sort of performing in bars and venues in Nashville, Tennessee, which is where your girl is from, she had high hopes of getting a record deal. She debuted her first self-titled album, Taylor Swift, at the age of 16. And soon enough, she was like performing with some big fucking acts like Rascal Flatts and Tim McGraw, who she also wrote a song called Tim McGraw, and Faith Hill. And her look was just, I'm going to go through her looks because they often define her eras. And here her look was just very like young, blonde, country, cute, like she was just that country.
The all-American girl.
Exactly. Yeah. 2008, we met her fearless era. And to be honest, if there is one word to describe Taylor Swift, it actually is fearless.
She is fucking fearless, which is something I didn't realise or hadn't looked into until, you know, researching for this podcast. She's fucking fearless.
Yeah, like if you're talking about exploring new genres or like saying what you want to say or writing about people that have wronged you, like she is fearless. So this was the era that most of us, if you're our age, probably came to know Taylor Swift. Love Story was playing at all like the year 7 or 8 discos, whatever year we were in. She started performing and doing that like really shocked face whenever she'd win an award or the crowd would erupt, and it was sort of like, it was endearing.
Yeah.
But you knew she wasn't shocked. Like she earned it. She earned that crowd. And so every time she'd be shocked, people would sort of be like, why are you so shocked? But it was cute. She was in Hannah Montana, the movie, playing the song Crazier.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
She was.
She was. And she fucking
totally
rocked
forgot
it.
About that. Yeah, yeah.
She released some amazing songs like 15 and You Belong With Me. And she
banger.
Even earned her first Album of the Year Grammy. So she earned a fucking Grammy for Fearless.
Holy shit. So how old was she then?
So she was 18 then. I know. And her look, the Fearless look, was defined by, like, her sparkly dresses and her ball gowns, you know, like Love Story ball gowns.
And the
her,
long curls.
Yes, her long, yeah. tightly curled hair. She had her signature winged eyeliner. She was always making hearts with her hands, like, to the crowd. And, of course, this is where we started seeing the lucky number 13. 13's her favourite number. Basically everything she touches these days has 13 in it, on it, around it, to do with it.
She loves a cryptic message,
she
right?
She loves a cryptic message. It's like such a part of her allure these days. She would have the number 13 written on her hand every day when she went on stage. She has actually already re-recorded and released Fearless, Taylor's version. So make sure if you are listening to that album, if this has sparked your nostalgia, don't listen to the old version. Listen to her new re-recorded version. Now, I thought it would be quite good for each era if we sort of looked at a few of the songs and who they might be written about, because that is so much of the story about Taylor Swift is her songs and her narratives. The song Forever and Always was written about Joe Jonas. This was a song that was based on her breakup with him. It features lyrics about her staring at her phone. And this is because, and she revealed on Ellen, that he broke the relationship off over a 25 to 27, now that there's, we don't know what one it is, second phone call. Like less than 30 second phone call. She got her record company to let her record a song about it real quick to add last minute to the album. And then she went on later to say on Ellen, like Ellen asked years later what her most rebellious thing she'd done as a teenager was. And she said, probably when I put Joe Jonas on blast on your show, that was too much. Because you know when you're young and you just feel like, you're probably like us right now, you can run your mouth.
Yeah, you don't
feel like
think about the consequences. You're sort of just like, oh, well, you know, whatever. It's my story to tell.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And so she obviously, I mean, great song, but she obviously was like, fuck, I shouldn't have really given all the messages behind
yeah.
it.
It's just fucking crazy. Like, she had such high-profile boyfriends.
I know.
Like, you know, most singers, they have this sort of private personal life that they can draw from and, like, there's not as many consequences. Just, like, knowing who the person is on the other side of the song, you know.
Makes you so much more invested.
It makes you so invested.
But and, like, also, the media loved it until, yeah. like, her reputation era when everyone just turned on her. She was met with some fucking double standards, which we'll get to, especially around age.
Oh, no, absolutely.
But Joe Jonas and Sophie Turner actually were just seen going to watch her SNL performance. Like, they're good mates now. She congratulated them big time on their baby.
Fuck, yeah.
And, like, they're real good mates, which is just gorgeous. Now, Mr. Perfectly Fine, which is from the re-recorded version of Fearless, is also rumoured to be about Joe. The song Should Have Said No, which is about someone that cheated on her, is written about, and I haven't really brought in the obscure high school boyfriends, but this okay. one was written about a guy called Sam Armstrong. And the reason I'm bringing this up is just because in the CD booklet, and I remember looking at it, she is obsessed with the lyrics in, like, in the album booklets. She would read through them. She capitalized every S, A, and M, in order.
Yes, I remember this. This was, I think, there must have been an era when I was younger where, I think it was Fearless or Speak Now sort of era,
yeah.
where I was invested in those songs. I think I used to sing them in singing lessons mm-hmm. and stuff, was looking through the lyrics,
yes.
remember that, and oh my God.
And at that age, you think that is the most cryptic shit someone could ever
do.
Right? Capitalizing
so
something,
fucking, cool. yeah.
fucking acrostic poems.
And you
like,
also think you're so smart for sort of like
Nancy Drew,
you know,
like cracking the code. Yeah, I know. So Sam Armstrong, he gets a shout out because he cheated on her. Notable moments in the Fearless era, Liv, come in 2009 when Ye, formerly known as Kanye West,
interrupted Taylor's acceptance speech for Best Female Video at the MTV VMAs. Now, Liv, I know we've all heard about this, but will you just give me a wee refresher on what happened here?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually watched this back.
I'm going to let you finish, but...
Yeah. Meta. I actually just watched this back, like, you know, a few hours ago, and just, it's pretty heartbreaking.
I know.
So basically, Ye interrupted to tell the crowd that Beyonce had the best video of all time. So this was when Taylor had just won the award for the best music video for You Belong With Me. Mm. And, like, it's fucking awkward. Everything about it is horrific. The crowd starts booing, and then Taylor said that she thought the boos were for her, but really they were booing Ye because, you know, he looked like a bit of a dick.
He was a dick.
Yeah, or like a jackass in Obama's words.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, it's sad because he was doing this to sort of make commentary on racism within the music industry. Mm-hmm. So you can see, you know, the thought process behind it, but it was just wrong place, wrong time. Like,
oh, yeah, we can't excuse it.
No, we can't excuse it at all. And Taylor very much took the brunt of this. And then a day after the VMAs, West appeared in a pre-planned appearance on The Tonight Show and said, "It's been a difficult day. I'm just dealing with the fact that I hurt someone or took anything away from a talented artist or from anyone because I only wanted to help people. I immediately knew in this situation that it was wrong. It's someone's emotions that I stepped on. It was rude, period." Which is interesting because later on in his career, he kind of has, you know, different thoughts about this whole thing.
Oh, yes, little precursor.
Mm-hmm.
Ye comes back in a big way in this story.
Yeah.
But it does sort of show his impulsivity and something that he's actually always struggled to control within himself. And it has been linked to mental illness and things like that. So there's no denying that this was a very layered situation. Mm-hmm. It just is... It's really difficult to see it coming up against a brand new sort of artist, a young woman in the industry, a country singer that, like, just sort of was trying to accept her award.
Absolutely. I think Ye must have just seen it as she's white, Beyonce's black, and this is the outcome sort of thing. But, yes, we can all agree, not his finest moment.
No, and it does get worse, I hate to tell you. Now, we move to 2010, the Speak Now era. Her Speak Now era was both magical and theatrical.
Is this where, like, the Wonderlust perfume?
Yes.
Yep, used to hit that hard.
I know, I used to hit that hard too. Like, this was... just, I mean, the song Enchanted pretty much wraps up this era. I went to see her in concert in this era. This is the one that I watched, and it was just like as big as a show could get. Like, she wanted it. She wanted everything. She wanted the sets, the castles, the flying around the room, the sparkles, like everything. Now, really interestingly, Speak Now was her first and only self-written album, written entirely by herself.
Right. Holy shit. And she was young as
well. Yeah. I did not know that this was her, like, she wrote this one all on her own. And I think a lot of it had to do with she was starting to face some of the, like, well, you know, that's not even your song, or, like, you wouldn't be able to do it without the song. You know, she was a young woman. She was, honestly, she was facing the brunt of it. She was sort of marking the roadmap.
Yeah.
Which she sings about in one of her new songs with Phoebe Bridgers on Red. Like, the roadmap for the younger stars, like the Olivia Rodrigos, to sort of into the music industry, see what she's been through and know that they can overcome it.
And be a little savvier, for sure.
Yes.
Because she was also, you know, although she may not have been the sole songwriter on albums, she was like the majority
songwriter on all
her albums. So, yeah.
She had a heavy hand on literally everything she touched, but I think this was just her way of being like, right, I'll do one completely on my own.
Just to show you all.
Yeah, you can see that I've done it. This album also has my all-time favourite Taylor Swift song on it, Long Live. It just gives me the best feelings.
I don't know that song.
No, I don't know if you do. It's quite a niche one, but it's like, oh, God, it's so good. I'm not going to sing on this podcast because we know that's controversial, but great song. Go and listen to Long Live, everybody. Send it to the top of the charts. No, don't listen until she's re-recorded Speak Now. Don't listen.
And you'll know why next episode.
Yeah, you'll know why on Saturday when we release the next episode. Now, her look for Speak Now was defined by purple, which is random.
Yes.
Purple's random. Purple's a random colour.
So Fearless was sort of purplish as well, wasn't it?
Oh, Fearless was sort of like golds and sparkles.
Oh, yeah.
Speak Now was defined by this, like,
deep purple. And this is why people think that Speak Now is the next album she's going to re-release, because it's her red era, yet in most of her appearances we've seen, like, lately, promoting the red era, she's wearing purple.
Another Easter egg. She's another a clever woman.
Yeah, and we could be wrong. People also think because she used 1989 model of car and the All Too Well music video, it's going to be 1989.
Saw that Mercedes.
Or, yeah, lots of people, you know, it's so fun. And she does say that half of the Easter eggs she, intentionally sets up. Half of them, like, the fans make up. She thinks they're good ideas and she runs with them, which we love.
Fuck,
that's
yes.
like how you create a great fandom / parasocial relationship.
Oh my gosh, like imagine like not even planning something and then being like, you are so right. That is like maybe subconsciously she was, you know, doing it in her head.
Exactly. Now, this was also the era of like the big hair flips, you know, she'd smash out.
Which she brought
songs.
Back on Saturday Night Live, which
I love. I love it. I actually read a really good tweet that was like, she used to get ridiculed for doing those hair flips and now she's back Saturday Night Live, older, bringing them back. Everyone's loving
them. She's just owning the shit out of herself.
I know. Yeah. And like, how dare we or the world have even let her not sort of own them in the moment she was doing them earlier?
I know. I think it does show how we have come quite a long way since all of this shit happened.
And like, someone has to be the front of it.
Yeah,
like,
the instigator.
I know. So let's get to some of the songs on this album and who they might have been about. So we have Taylor Lautner. Now, did you ever watch
Valentine's Day?
Yeah, I was going to say, did you watch Valentine's Day? Yeah. So the two met in 2009 when they co-starred on Valentine's Day. And apparently the song that's about Taylor Lautner is back to December, because when she sings "Your Tanned Skin, Your Sweet Smile" on top of like her apology for a rough night in December, which lines up with the timelines of when she broke up with him, but it was a really like amicable and quite a nice relationship, I think.
Bless. Not a great movie, but a great
relationship. No, not a great movie, but kind of a good trash watch, eh?
Yeah.
Now, the song Mine, this was allegedly written for and about Corey Monteith, because it's about a boy that Taylor really knew.
Did she go out with Corey Monteith?
I think for a brief time, like just under a month, they had like a
little bit of a fling.
And you know, she holds moments and she can turn moments into songs and moments into lifetimes.
It's her job.
Yeah, and Mine's quite a cute song, so I think that's quite sweet.
I thought you were about to sing it. I honestly thought you were about to sing it.
And Mine's quite a good song, so let me just take it away.
And then that's it for the episode. Go buy Lucy's version of this
album. Actually just going to sing her whole discography from now on. Now let's get to John Mayer. So we have the song Dear John, which John gets a few songs, but Dear John
is quite explicitly,
quite explicitly
about John.
His. And he did have a bit to say about it. So the lyrics in Dear John point a lot to their age difference. Taylor was 19, John Mayer was 32. And this is
wild,
this is interesting, because when she was dating older men, constantly, like, it was just fine. Like, you know, it's the man that's older, so like it was sort of accepted. But then when she, we'll find out later, was dating a younger man, she was like ridiculed for a 4-year age gap.
Yeah.
And it's double standards.
It's bullshit.
Double standards everywhere. Anyway, John Mayer took the song Dear John quite personally. And he said to Rolling Stone magazine, "It made me feel terrible because I didn't deserve it. I'm pretty good at taking accountability now, and I never did anything to deserve that. It was a really lousy thing for her to do." He said that it was a low blow, and then he actually responded musically with his song Paper Dolls, saying, "Don't you think I was too young to be messed with? The girl in the dress cried the whole way home. I should have known." Which is literally her lyrics that she wrote, sung back weirdly. It doesn't really make that
it
much sense
make
to me.
Any sense. But
I think it was just him trying to get some sort of upper hand, but it didn't really work. Also, the songs Ours and The Story of Us are allegedly about John Mayer.
Right.
Now, Joe Jonas makes another appearance. She didn't date him again, but she had some more songs.
She was reminiscing.
For him. Yeah. Yes. Now, Better Than Revenge, which is a song that has been quite outwardly, like, she doesn't really like it anymore because it's not that feminist. Like, it's all about getting revenge on another woman, even though, you know, it takes two to tango. But this this song was about another actress and vintage dresses. And Joe Jonas dated Camilla Bell after he dated Taylor Swift. And she was like, known for her vintage dresses. She's an actress. And she actually explained that Camilla Bell had come between her and Joe Jonas. So, she was back in her young era when she was still, like, feeling like she owed the world explanations for things, even though she didn't. And so that song is for Joe Jonas. Last Kiss, which is a really slow, quite beautiful song. Again, another song that's reportedly about or for Joe Jonas. So
she must just sit there with her guitar and, like, think back and be like, who am I going to write about today? Like,
what's hurting
what
me now?
What am I feeling? Like, she's got this, like, entire catalogue of boys to...
I feel like she's got a great filing cabinet in her brain. Oh, like,
absolutely.
She remembers and can paint the picture of a moment so well. True artist. Now, before we get into what is allegedly her best era, her red era, I think we should hear from our beautiful sponsors. So you guys heard me discover live on mic that Pen 15 is on Neon, and it's literally my all-time favourite show. So now Neon has my two favourite shows, Pen 15 and Succession, and there's really no excuse for you not signing up because there's also a 14-day free trial.
Absolutely, Liz. Honestly, like, I saw that they had Sex in the City, and I did say that I'm not huge on the movies, but the TV show is one of my favourite sort of go-to comfort shows. So that's really fucking exciting.
And they're getting the new reboot. Like, Neon is getting the reboot, and we have to watch it.
Yes, that's so fucking cool.
I liked the movies and I kind of want to watch them again, but I want to ask you, who do you reckon me and you are in Sex and the City?
Okay, I've been thinking about this actually. Okay. And I think that you're a combination. I think we've both got a bit of Miranda in us.
Yeah.
But you're slightly more Samantha and I'm slightly more Carrie.
Okay. Yeah. I was about to say to you main character energy, but there's four main characters, so like anyone that you picked, it would have been. In case you haven't noticed, Neon is our favourite New Zealand-based streaming service. It's got literally everything you want, and I've said it once, I'll say it again, you can get a 14-day free trial, and then you'll be hooked, I promise.
Oh, you absolutely will be, and none of this would actually be possible without Neon, like it really wouldn't be, so thank you so much, Neon, you're fucking great.
We love you, Neon. Right, Liv, it's time to get into the era that we're kind of in right now, and arguably the best era, the experimental era, the Red era. So it's 2012, and Red was a bit of a turning point in Taylor's music. She went from, like, country or country pop to, like, I don't know, like, pure either pop or a mix of pop and like EDM and dubstep and probably a bit of country twang still in there.
Yeah,
but
a little bit folksy.
Yeah, she really just played with it, which is what music and making art is.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
About and it's why Red was such a hit.
Yeah, and that's what she said, because she was 22 and she was like, you know, this is what we want for all 22-year-olds. We want them to experiment.
Yes.
You're not locked into one genre.
No, you are not. So when you think of the Red era, you probably think of like her red lipstick, black fedoras. She just had her hair like straightened, cut. She had bangs. Like she was very modern. She had on those like high-waisted shorts. Like she just looked very different. Every era she looks more and more different, and this was like kind of preppy,
yeah,
but like still quite cool. And I mean, obviously a lot of Red. Now we can't go through all the best songs on Red because literally all of them except for arguably 22 are really really good.
I mean, 22 is there for radio play.
I mean,
we'll give
yeah,
her that one.
It was probably good for the streams. But who was she dating and what songs were about who?
Oh, please do tell me.
So first off, Jake Gyllenhaal, we've got to talk about him. Now let's just quickly tell the story about her and Jake, because honestly, it's not that long of a story. Essentially, Taylor and Jake dated for about 3 months, And while their relationship may have been brief, its impact has certainly not been. Its impact has been quite long-lasting. So they got together in October of 2010 and stayed together for just long enough for them to visit his sister, Maggie Gyllenhaal, for Thanksgiving and for him to not show up to her 21st birthday. Just long enough for all of this to happen. Her birthday's in December, by the way. Right. Now, she was only 20 when they started dating and he was 10 years older. So All Too Well is the song that has been infamously loved by all. Not a single, not even a music video, but just loved by everyone. And that is, allegedly for legal purposes, about Jake Gyllenhaal. So first of all, let's just talk about the scarf really quickly. So the red scarf is like the symbol for All Too Well because Taylor left a scarf there at his sister's house and allegedly Jake still got it in his drawer even now because it reminds him of innocence and it smells like Taylor.
Just to quote the zombie.
Just to quote the zombie. I won't
say plagiarism,
but I'll quote it to you. Now, apparently he doesn't still have it even now. Apparently, there's a couple rumours. The right. First rumour, which false, but I'm going to tell you anyway, was that his friend Andrew Burnap has it. His friend tweeted, this is going to sound...
Andrew Burnap?
Apparently he's like an actual actor or something. Okay, like, right. This guy's legit. He tweeted, this is going to sound crazy and you'll definitely think I'm kidding, but I'm not. I think I'm in possession of that scarf.
No, imagine going to your garage or whatever. You see a red scarf, you're like, that's Taylor Swift.
It's Taylor's, and I'm going to tweet about it. But thanks to our friends Des Moines, I've gotten to the bottom of the scarf, Liv. They actually tracked down someone sent to them some intel saying that they have the scarf and they feel really bad about it. They're a big Taylor Swift fan. Des Moines said they can't tell us like the story of how they came into possession of the scarf because it's this person's story to tell. But Des Moines helped this person get in touch with Taylor Swift's team and they authenticated that, yes, this was the scarf. And
did
now
they do a DNA test on the hair? Lift or
well, I think they might have just showed Taylor.
She's like, that's it.
And they're getting it back to Taylor. So Taylor, if this is all true, if Des Moines isn't leading me down a rabbit hole, Taylor is going to be back in possession of the scarf.
No fucking way. And it's not even going to smell like her anymore, is it?
No, it's not going to smell like innocence because she's been through it.
It's going to smell like the other girl.
It's going to smell like
if I was that girl, I've been spraying my perfume all over it.
Oh my God, no, I would never watch it nor would I touch it.
Yeah, but that's the difference between a true stan and not true stan.
True stan and someone that just wants a nice scarf. Now, let's just quickly talk about Sadie Sink and Dylan O'Brien and the music video. Now, just it's amazing the way that Taylor's brain works. The fact that Sadie Sink and Dylan O'Brien, one, have a similar age gap to Jake Gyllenhaal and Taylor Swift. Two, that they have the same, like, public perception as Taylor Swift and Jake Gyllenhaal had. And the fact that Sadie Sink, most of us know her as a middle schooler from Stranger Things. So in our minds, when we see Sadie Sink, we associate her as a young girl.
Mm.
Dylan O'Brien had us come up about 10 years ago. Like, he is seen in our eyes as an adult. Much like Taylor and Jake were seen at the time of their dating.
Fuck, she's clever.
She's fucking clever. And honestly, thank you to the TikTok person that pointed that out to me because, yolza, you're correct. Like, it's the same.
Yolza. Also, I love that they're reminiscent of Taylor and Jake, like, looks-wise. But
I know.
Then it's not like she's tried to match it because I feel like that would have been kind of tacky.
Yes, but they're just enough,
yeah,
like, for you to know,
yeah,
the vibe.
Yeah, like, you feel it.
I know. Also, again, we watched another TikTok the other day that said that the short film for All Too Well actually meets all the prerequisites to win an Academy Award. Like, it's showing in theatres. It's, like, long enough. It was shot on the right kind of camera. And this TikToker was sort of saying, what would be the biggest way to sort of get back at an actor who might have wronged you? And what better way than, you know, win a fucking Academy Award? Also, Liv, just the improv gaslighting scene in the All Too Well music video.
Mm.
Amazing.
Mm, great.
Apparently they couldn't cut the cameras because there was just so much good shit in there.
Honestly, just so much going on and he is fucking his way through the scene.
You know, he's just saying, fuck this. Now, the duration of the 10-minute music video didn't just come about because she felt like writing a 10-minute song. Apparently, this was the original length of the song. She had gone through the breakup. She was just riffing with her band at a rehearsal and someone recorded it. It was 10 minutes. There's been a little bit of, like, hearsay that maybe some of the lines, obviously, have been rewritten. Like, apparently, the fuck the patriarchy, like, that wasn't really a big thing that you said back at the time of writing.
Yeah.
So, but, like, I kind of expected that it wouldn't be the exact word-for-word replica.
But she'll have honed it, yeah. And also, I don't know, I got this from the music, from the video, sorry, the short film, that it feels like she wrote that last bit.
Yes.
Later.
Because she's talking about the age gap and like, she's brave enough.
Yeah.
Hindsight. But it's just amazing, isn't it?
It's all hearsay though, isn't it?
All hearsay. Now, We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together is apparently also about Jake Gyllenhaal because the lyrics about him loving indie bands, which she refers to Jake Gyllenhaal loving indie bands quite a bit. Also in the music video, there's a scarf that's identical to the scarf that Swift was wearing on the date that she's pictured with Jake Gyllenhaal. The Moment I Knew, stunning song. That is about someone not showing up to your birthday party. And it's basically, it is the story of Jake Gyllenhaal not showing up to her 21st birthday party.
She knew it was really over.
It was over. The Last Time, that stunning song that we were talking about earlier, that is also apparently about Jake Gyllenhaal.
Now, another whirlwind romance, three months of just hectic pain.
Yeah, 3 months of like pain and pleasure and just more than I think I've ever felt in my entire life.
Probably same.
Like, I'd kill for 3 months of that intense feeling of anything. Give it to me. Now, another whirlwind romance that she had, and one that put me on edge in my direction of days, was her romance with Harry Styles. This broke the internet.
If you were to choose one stand-in.
Stand-in!
Is that it?
I don't think I've ever said stand-in. It's probably right.
Oh,
I choose to stand them both. Don't make me pick.
Nah. Harry, surely.
Oh, but like,
I thought that would be easy for you.
The history of, like, I'm just respecting the shit out of Taylor. She's had to work from the ground up. Like, love Harry. They were manufactured into a boy band on X Factor. Like,
that's true.
I don't know. I just feel like the grind was there for Taylor. But what Harry stands
your
for,
heart?
We love.
Sorry to really put you on the spot.
I think my heart's with Taylor.
Oh, that shocks me.
I love Harry Styles.
I love that, yeah.
Don't get me wrong.
Just a caveat, I do, in fact, think about him before I fall asleep.
Yeah, but I just love Taylor. Now, did you ever see the videos, this was deep in One Direction fandom, of them on New Year's Eve kissing in Times Square?
No.
Okay, lucky, because, like, honestly.
Jealousy? Bleh.
Yeah, jealousy and, like, cringe. But they didn't date for very long. But also, if I dated Harry Styles, I'd fucking write about it. So, like,
oh, absolutely.
Go off, queen. Apparently, and this is a little bit disputed, I Knew You Were Trouble was written about Harry Styles.
Oh.
She did say that when she was performing it at the Brit Awards, she said it was quite... It's not hard to access that emotion when the person the song is directed at is standing by the side of the stage watching. Styles was confirmed to be in this position at the time. This is a little bit disputed. Some people don't think it's for him, but some people do. Now, also on Red. Now, I'm only talking about the songs that featured on Red here because there's more about Harry in the 1989 era. But on Red, there's a song called Come Back, Be Here, which is a bonus track. And that's about being in a long-distance relationship. There's lines about her being in New York while he's in London and vice versa. And, you know, that's just...
2 + 2.
The writing's on the wall. Yep. We also have Begin Again. And Begin Again was written about Robert F. Kennedy's grandson, Connor Kennedy. So during the summer of 2012, she dated a guy called Connor Kennedy, whose grandfather is Robert F. Kennedy.
Prestigious. And
I know. She received some criticism. And guess what for?
What?
For the age gap. Because she was 22 and Connor was 18.
Come on now.
And she received criticism. Like, this is just such a double standard. Like
ludicrous.
It was fine when John Mayer was dating someone like 10
and
years
old. Like 18 and 22, like,
You're similar states of mind. Like, come on. Anyway, apparently, now this is hearsay. A lot of the stuff about dating is hearsay because, one, what right do we even have to be getting in there? And two, like, I'm not going to be able to ring her up and confirm it. So apparently Taylor purchased a home near the Kennedy compound in Port Massachusetts during their romance. It started to look like things weren't going so well when his family accused her of crashing the wedding of Connor's cousin, Kyle, in August. Her reps have denied it, but that's just like a crack-up story.
So niche.
I know. But Begin Again's a really nice song about, like, starting dating again and someone that respects you. One of the lines is actually, I think it's strange that you think I'm funny because he never did, which is like a direct link back to Taylor Swift in the 10-minute All Too Well song saying that she was never good at telling jokes or she never felt like she was good at telling jokes. And so like it made her begin again, believe in love again. And I just, it's a really sweet song.
No, that's really nice.
So now we round out Red. Go and listen to her re-recordings of that, not her Scooter Braun ones.
No.
We're in 2014 now. I know, it's taken us a while to get here, but we're in 2014. It's 1989. No, it's not. It's 2014.
Did you write that down?
No, I didn't. It just came to me.
I don't believe you.
Truly, if you could see this.
No, I do believe you.
This was her first, like, full pop album and also the start of the Girl Squad era that every single media outlet had something to say about.
Oh, holy fuck, they rabbited on about
this. Oh, I know. The Girl Squad era, people felt excluded by it, people loved it, people all had something to say about it. Now, this had songs like Shake It Off, which I didn't really like.
No.
Blank Space, which was a great song, but too much radio play, would you say?
Yeah, overplayed, but a banger.
I did
love that.
And basically everywhere you looked, Taylor Swift was there. Like, you couldn't avoid Taylor Swift, and, like, rightly so, she was smashing it.
And I feel like that album, it just, like, is very coherent.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cohesive?
Cohesive. It's very cohesive.
And coherent, as in, like, it makes sense.
As in she wasn't drunk while she was writing it. Yeah.
But cohesive in terms of it all just slots together,
doesn't
it?
No, it does. It's, yeah.
You're right. So her look changed, as it did with every other era. She moved to New York City. She cut her hair into a short bob. She changed up her fashion. She went for more, like, I don't know, she wore a lot of crop tops and, like, short skirts. And she just fully transitioned from, like, country to pop.
Yeah.
She was having fun. Now, she wrote on this album the song Style, which, if Harry Styles' name wasn't already in the title of the track, it was also notable that it was about a guy that sort of looked like James Dean, wore a white T-shirt, like, and the guy that plays her love interest in the music video looked similar
to
Harry Styles.
I feel like the Harry Styles then is very different to the Harry Styles
yes,
now.
Yes, he was very much like rock, like grow my hair out, I'm not sure what I want to wear yet, and now he's fully just himself. Also, Out of the Woods, which features phrases about paper aeroplanes flying, and they both had a matching paper aeroplane necklace at this time. Also, Out of the Woods sort of appears to mention a snowmobile accident that both Harry Styles and Taylor Swift were involved in during the accident. But this song sparked a really fucked up rumor that Taylor Swift and Harry Styles killed someone in a vehicle, like vehicular manslaughter rumor.
What, in a snowmobile?
Well, I don't know if it was in a snowmobile, if this just sort of, you know, how things just form into something
just
else. But
snowball,
like, there's this wild rumor that they killed someone. And then the song No Body, No Crime, that comes out on her like later album.
She's just confessing to, like, killing someone.
Well, that's what people are saying.
Oh,
and I don't believe that, but I think it's just hilarious to, like, even
contemplate
that. Now, this is a different type of relationship, this next song, and it's the song Bad Blood, which is about her feud, her very, very vocal feud. Not vocal in terms of we heard them fighting with each other, but, like, very out there in the media feud with Katy Perry. So the feud came about when Taylor Swift's Red Tour dancers left her tour early to go and perform on Katy Perry's tour, Prismatic. In 2014, Taylor Swift explained to Rolling Stone magazine that this killed their friendship because for years she was never sure, one, if they were friends or not. And, like, Katy would come up to her at awards shows and say something and then walk away, and Taylor would think, are we friends or did she just give me the harshest insult of my life? Then she did something so horrible, I was like, oh, we're just straight up enemies. Enemies! 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 And it wasn't even about a guy. It had to do with business. The day after that profile came out, Katy Perry tweeted, watch out for the Regina George in sheep's clothing. Savage.
Oh my God, so petty.
Then Katy Perry released a perfume named Mad Love, which was a reference to, because baby, now we got bad blood. You know what you used to have?
Mad Love. Do you think that this was publicity stunt?
Well, I'm not sure. I don't think, okay, I don't know.
It just
know
seems
Taylor.
Like to just come out of the blue. Like, imagine just suddenly.
I know. I don't think Taylor would have done this as a publicity stunt.
Maybe
but I
on
reckon
Katy Perry's behalf.
Yeah, might have. Yeah, I mean, I don't know either of them, but Katy Perry seems more the type. Then someone tweeted Katy asking if Taylor would collab with her ever, and Katy said, if she says sorry, then sure. Then things went quiet for a few years, quite a bit. And then Taylor Swift, when she was like gearing up for her Reputation tour, posted a photo of a literal olive branch. You know how it's like extend the olive branch to say sorry? That Katy Perry had sent her, along with a note where Katy Perry had written that she was deeply sorry. Swift captioned the photo, "Thank you, Katy," with two hearts. And then again later, Taylor sends Katy a Peace at Last chocolate chip cookie like package, which she captions, "Feels good." The location she tagged was "Let's Be Friends." So it's all playing out quite publicly. And then Katy is in her music video for You Need to Calm Down, which is in her Lover era, wearing her Met Gala hamburger outfit. Katy Perry and Taylor Swift, who's dressed up as fries, like hug and they slow dance and they officially, on the record, end their wild, weird feud.
Strange. So, so strange. But I'm glad I have been enlightened about that information.
I'm so glad as well. Now, we've reached our Reputation era, where everyone seemed to have turned on Taylor Swift, like in the time between 1989 and Reputation. Everyone was coming for her, and a lot of it was because of falsehoods, like the media just piled on top of her. So following the like peak of her career in 1989, she did find herself in the midst of like just the most public scrutiny. And it all started, of course, with her infamous feud with Ye and Kim Kardashian and Scooter Braun.
Yes, so this is all very, very interesting and super related to the re-recording of her albums. But first, I think it's quite interesting to see that Taylor and Ye had actually kind of patched things up in between, you know, the 2009 VMA whole debacle and then this 2016 whole thing with Famous. So basically in 2015, Taylor made a speech at the VMAs. She must have been giving Ye an award. And she said, "I first met Kanye West 6 years ago at this show, actually." And then she said, "It seems like everyone in the world knew about our infamous encounter at the VMAs. But something that you may not know about Kanye West's album College Dropout was that it was my very first album that my brother and I bought on iTunes when I was 12 years old. And I have been a fan of his for as long as I can remember, because Kanye defines what it means to be a creative force in music, fashion, and wildlife. So I guess I have to say to all the other winners tonight, I'm really happy for you and I'm going to let you finish, but Kanye West has had one of the greatest careers of all time."
Good on her, eh? Like, bigger person vibes.
Yeah, she really took that back. I've read in a few articles that she kind of got obsessed with him respecting her, because I think she felt so disrespected by him and not seen by him at all in 2009 that she almost had to, like, prove it to herself that she could gain his respect.
Yeah.
And then so it was, I think for Taylor, she wants people to like her, you know, she's always said this, she's thrives on that sort of recognition. And yeah, it was the same with Ye. So it was really hard for her when the feud was later reignited when Ye released the song Famous, which I think we all know, in 2016, which had the line, "I feel like me and Taylor might still have sex. I made that bitch famous."
And if we're talking about respect and disrespect, that's like the epitome of disrespect.
Absolutely. And he also released a corresponding music video which depicted a naked Taylor. So Taylor was not happy, and she made it quite public that she wasn't happy. And then Kim Kardashian actually posted a video of a recorded conversation of Ye and Taylor, and Ye was asking for Taylor's permission to use her in the song, basically.
"So my next single, I wanted you to tweet it. It's a Good Friday. It's dropping as a Good Friday song. So that's why I'm calling you, that I wanted you to put the song out."
"Okay. Like, what would people, I guess it would just be people would be like, Why is this happening?
Well, the
I think it has something to do with it, probably.
Well, the reason why it will be happening is because it has a very controversial line at the beginning of the song about you.
What does it say?
Okay, so it says, and the song is so, so dope, and I've literally sat with my wife, with my whole management team, with everything, and try to rework this line. I've thought about this line for 8 months. I've had this line, and I tried to rework it every which way. And the original way that I thought about it is the best way, but it's the most controversial way. So it's gonna go Eminem a little bit. So can you brace yourself for a second?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. it says, wait a second. You sound sad.
Well, is it going to be mean?
No, I don't think it's mean.
Okay, then let me hear it.
Okay. It says, and the funny thing is, when I first played it and my wife heard it, she was like, huh? What? That's too crazy, blah, blah, blah. And then, like, when Ninja from D Atwork heard it, he was like, oh my God, this is the craziest shit. This is why I love Kanye, blah, 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 that kind of thing. And now it's like my wife's favorite fucking line. I just wanted to give you some premise of that, right?
Okay.
Okay. So it says, I feel like Taylor Swift might owe me sex.
That's not mean.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, well, this is the thing why I'm calling you, because you got an army. You own a country of motherfucking 2 billion people, basically, that if you felt that it's funny and cool and like hip hop and felt like, you know, just the college dropout and the artist like Ye that you love, then I think that people would be like way into it. And that's why I think it's super genius to have you be the one that says, oh, I like this song a lot. Like, yeah, whatever, you know, this is cool, whatever. It's like, you know, like I got like shit on my album where I'm like, I bet me and Ray J will be friends if we ain't love the same bitch.
Oh my God. I mean, yeah. I need to think about it because I just need to, like, you know, you hear something for the first time and you just need to think about it.
Yeah.
Because it is absolutely crazy. I'm glad it's not mean, though. It doesn't feel mean. But, like, oh my God, the buildup you gave it, I thought it was going to be like that stupid, dumb bitch. Like, but it's not.
It's really fucking awkward.
It's
and
very
kind of,
manipulative.
Yeah, he just like, he knows she loves his music and he really like plays on that. And obviously he's trying to get what he wants, but he says, can I use the line, something along the lines of, I feel like me and Taylor might still have
or
sex.
Or I feel like Taylor Swift owes me sex.
Yeah, that was the actual
But he's
line
like
he
gone
said.
Through a whole lot of like backing her into a corner before this.
Yeah, exactly. It's like a whole lot of like, oh, so-and-so loves it. This is
it's
what
my
makes
favorite
me
line.
Me. Yeah, I've spent 8 months on this. And then she is sort of like pretty cautious at the start and then she was like, agrees. But then what she didn't agree to was him using the line, I made that bitch famous, because that just fucking detracts from her entire, like,
career. I made like, that bitch famous.
Ego.
I'm sorry.
The ego.
She won a Grammy and a VMA before you made that bitch famous. So
famous. So, yeah. And then Taylor responded to this video saying, where is the video of Kanye telling me that he was going to call me that bitch in his song? So she also said, it doesn't exist because it never happened. While I wanted to be supportive of Kanye on the phone call, you cannot approve of a song you haven't heard. Being falsely painted as a liar when I was never given the full story or played any part of the song is character assassination. So that's sort of like the premise of this Reputation era. Luce, do you want to tell us a bit more about it?
Yeah, and then everyone just, for some reason, really sided with Ye on this one and just saw Taylor as a snake, which she did play on. Snakes made a big, like, appearance in all the themes and vibes of her Reputation era.
It just gave me such that, like, whole thing of you can't take a joke.
Yeah,
like,
it was horrible. Like, I can't believe
I can say
it.
Whatever I want to say about you and you have to laugh because it's kind of embarrassing if you take this seriously.
It was horrible because, yeah. Like, in hindsight, everyone could see that, oh, my God, like, we treated her like shit. She was in the right. Mm. She disappeared from public life for months. Like, she...
It's like a year, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Like, she has been outwardly... And does she talk about this in Miss Americana?
Mm-hmm.
Like, she was... terrified to do anything, yeah. Say anything, be anything. And then she came back in 2017 with Reputation. She declared that the old Taylor was dead in her lead single, Look What You Made Me Do. And she, like, shed her good girl status because I think she was just like, well, this didn't work for me in the end. Like, me being who I was didn't work for me. Let me reinvent myself.
Yeah, because she talks about how she was what everyone wanted her to
yes.
be. And then she was thriving off of that approval from people that she didn't even know.
Yeah.
And then suddenly being like, holy fuck, like, I've actually kind of been, you know, molded into this person.
Even though she sort of come back to it, but she would have been having an identity crisis. Like, is this me and who I am? This nice, you know, yeah. like, lovely, does things for other people only. Or do I just not know who I am because I've been molded
because
here?
She just was obsessed with being good.
Yeah.
And then that went into, like, her political standing as well. She never spoke out about anything political because, you know, it was always like good girls don't talk about politics. Mm. And then so...
And then she did.
Yeah. She really, like, became feisty.
Yes.
In this and, era.
Yeah. And she kind of had to. It's like taking something too far to, like, then come back to who you actually are. So with yeah. Reputation, like, she was full. Everything was dark. Like, you know, like, everything she was wearing was dark. She was edgier. She was grungier. She bleached her hair. She, like, you know, went platinum blonde and cut it off. Reputation, which lots of people have called it a bit of a flop album, but then also it could have just been before its time. She was dating Calvin Harris at the time of all this. Apparently the song I Did Something Bad and Getaway Car are rumoured to be about him.
There's some really good songs on that album.
Yeah, I know.
And, like, yeah, I totally agree with the fact that it was before its time.
Yeah.
Because I remember when those music videos came out and I was like, oh my God, what the fuck is going on? Probably like a shitload of internalised misogyny in
yes.
my behalf.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, now I'm just like... Good on you, girl.
And I think the tour was one of her biggest tours, like the biggest tour she's ever done. And she would get all those, like, other artists to come out on stage with her. It was quite iconic. Now, there's also, she dated Tom Hiddleston, and Getaway Car is also rumoured to be about him. But I feel like this was the era where she was more talking to the people that were hating on her. She wasn't writing about love or boyfriends so much. She was more like... I am gonna write about the experience I'm going through and I'm gonna, like, clap back in the way that I know how. And that was by releasing this music and putting on a really fucking good show. Now, we are going to go through the whole reason that she's having to re-record and wanting to re-record her masters. There's a lot more drama to do with Ye and Scooter Braun and Scott Borchetta and just all these people that make me want to, like, I don't know, deck them. And we're going to go through her final few eras, or maybe not her final, she could have more in her, Lover, Evermore and Folklore. But first, Liv, before we get to part two, before we wrap up this podcast, what is on your radar?
On my radar is Insecure. I've seen that it's on Neon.
Yes.
And I'm really fucking excited to... watch it because I feel like I totally missed the boat with
yep.
this
Same.
With this series. It came out ages ago and people talk about it all the time, and it's Issa Rae and she wrote it and starred in it, and I think it's based off of, like, a web series that she did.
Sick.
So yeah, I'm really excited to watch that finally. It's been on my list for a long time. But yeah, what's on your radar?
Well, I'm surprised this wasn't on your radar, but Adele's new album comes out on November the 19th.
I thought about putting that on my radar. But,
and it's yeah. heavily on my radar. Also on my radar, Pen 15. I talked about it last week. I'm still fucking excited. It comes out in December. Like, it's like part, it's like season two, part two or part B. So I don't know what that has in store. It's on Neon. You guys know that I bang on about Pen 15 all the time. Please go and watch it so you can come and talk to me about it. And then my third thing on my radar is Tick Tick Boom. Now, the reason I know about this is because Lin-Manuel Miranda is directing it, and it's a story, Liv, about a musical we want to watch but haven't
yes,
watched.
Yes, I was like, why does this sound
yes.
familiar? Yes, no, I should have told you, but I started watching, well, I watched most of it the other day.
Of what?
Rent.
Oh,
Yeah.
I'm jealous. You should have told me.
I know.
Well, basically, this is about the person, Jonathan Larson, who wrote the musical Rent. And he's played by Andrew Garfield. And I love Lin-Manuel Miranda, who's, like, directing this. And I'm very excited about it. It's also out in December. Now, Liv and I are going to wrap up this podcast, but you guys better be ready for part two.
Honestly, part two, you're going to want to listen.
Part two is where shit gets
so
real.
So much shit. And I think it's so important because Taylor is paving history, like, in the music industry. She's really, like, doing her part. So listen to it and then you'll understand why it's so important to listen to her versions
and not
as opposed to
the other versions.
Yes.
As usual, you can find us on Shit You Should Care About. You should share how you listen to this podcast, put it on your stories, leave us a rating, review, subscribe to the newsletter. Any way you want to be with us, you can be with us because we're everywhere. And we will see you on Saturday for a very special part two.
Can't wait to see you there. Bye.